Hello, and welcome back to the Wheel Talk podcast. My name is Abby Mickey. I'm here to talk about bike racing with two of the coolest people I know, Gracie Elvin.
Yeah, we're pretty cool. Just saying. Self-proclaimed cool.
Lauren Rowney.
I love that because all through high school, I was definitely not cool. I take that back. The last year I was a little bit cool because I finally got to the point where I was like, I don't care that I'm not cool. And then all the kids thought that was cool. So there you go. No, it's good to be back.
Well, now we're all cool in our own little bubbles. So
cool for cycling, which is not that cool.
cool in the cycling world, we think, maybe. I feel like cycling is cool. Cycling is the new golf, right?
Sure. Yes. Yeah.
You two are way cooler because you mountain bike, and of the two of the disciplines of cycling that there are, mountain biking is the coolest of them. For sure.
This is true. This is very true.
Yeah, Abby, get on it.
Hey, I mountain bike. I one time was a professional mountain biker.
Well, there you go.
It's a very small pool of people in the United States of America. I have the license, but not the talent.
And you were an amazing skier. So for me, that's cool that you do the snow sports and the summer.
Yeah.
You know, that's again, definitely lacking.
Nordic skiing.
Not cool.
Nordic skiing, not cool. No.
It's cool in my book.
Unless you're Scandinavian or Jesse Diggins. What is cool? We make our own cool these days. It's 2024.
Yep. Who cares? My mom thinks I'm cool.
That's the only thing that matters.
All my life, I've been waiting for my mom to say that.
Okay. Ronda van Drenthe was on Sunday, and we're going to talk about it. But we also had some other cool things going on in the world of women's cycling in Spain, amongst other places in the world. And Trofeo Alfredo Binda is coming up, and I have a question to pose to you two about that one. But let's start with Drenthe. So different race this year than they've ever had in the past. It finished on the Vamberg, so like a short, punchy uphill finish, where normally it ends in town. So it's generally a bunch sprint. The last three editions won by Lorena Wiebes in a bunch sprint, a reduced bunch sprint. But this year they changed the course. They couldn't get the permits for the usual course, so instead they did laps of a 30-kilometer circuit and finished atop the Vamberg. The change of course didn't really change the outcome of the race too much. There was a very decisive winner at the end of the day and some pretty interesting splits that happened along the way, one of which I am excited to talk to you guys about. It came down to a reduced bunch sprint in the end, won by Lorena Wiebes with Elisa Balsamo taking second, Puck Pieterse taking third after a really aggressive race. So let's dive into it. It was a longer race than the women usually have in the one day. It's almost 160 kilometers. And I feel like there is this discussion that we have been having for decades about women racing these distances. Last year, the race was only, 90K, although a lot of that had to do with the weather. It snowed, so they had to shorten the race and cut out all the cobbled sectors. But this race, with this circuit, imagine if it was 120K or 110K. They just lopped off some of those extra Ks. I feel like it would have been a lot more exciting. In the end, everything came back together and the final 14K was basically in slow motion before they got to the finish. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, I love a sprint finish. I feel like, especially now when we have Wiebes and we have other riders that are kind of rising to the level to challenge Wiebes, the sprint finishes are awesome. But I feel like for this race, we didn't have a lot of the best riders lining up, even though we did have the best sprinters. I think it could have been shorter and it would have been just as exciting. Like, lop off one of those laps and make it 130, you know? I just don't see the need to have such a long race for the women. Not that they can't race it. Of course they can. Like, physically, of course they can. Of course they can race Milan-San Remo. But it's what makes women's cycling exciting is that the races are shorter, so they're punchier, they're faster, they're more exciting, there's more that happens. There's less of a waiting game. And I feel like that was kind of something that maybe could be taken away from the race on Sunday, was that it was maybe a smidge too long.
Yeah, maybe. Probably for this particular instance, it might have been too long in the different course for this year. I liked the 160 with the old course. I liked the finish of that. I liked those tough cobbled sections closer to the end. And looking ahead to the next bunch of races, it's important to get one of the longer ones under the belt going towards Flanders. So I think for riders, it's actually not a bad thing. But it's you kind of brought that up too, that it's lost its edge as a premier race. So we're not particularly seeing the strongest field there anymore, whereas in the past it was, you know, one of the top races to go to and to win. So yeah, I think, yeah, yes and no, Abby. It was too long for this year, but in general I wouldn't say it was in the past.
I love it when you disagree with me.
It's just adding her expertise on this. And like, I mean, this, yeah, it's, I agree with Gracie and you, actually. I agree with you both. I think when you have those 160-kilometer stages in, like, the Giro or something, they have no place there. Mm-hmm. I think for a race like Drenthe in the old format, like Gracie said, it's conducive to a longer race because it's flat. It does have those hard sections, but the overall speed of the race means that they're almost racing the same time as they would in, say, a hillier race. With less distance, so the time in the legs is about the same. But yeah, I liked the older finish as well. And to be honest, whether it was the old finish or this finish, I think Gracie's pick was Wiebes, and she was 100% spot on, because even finishing up the Vanberg, we know that she can win up there. I did think there would be some riders getting a bit closer. I think Pfeiffer Georgie would have been a better contender for DSM based on that finish, because Charlotte Kuhl is great and she's fast, but she hasn't proven yet, I think, in any of the races, tell me if I'm wrong, that she can finish on such a hard finish like Wiebes has done. So she's proven that time and time again. We know how well Wiebes can climb. And so she was the all-out favorite. So I guess the big discussion point is really the last 14 kilometers and what those teams were thinking who had the numbers still there in that reduced bunch.
In terms of this course versus the old course had more cobbled sectors and also more chances for crosswinds. Mm. So the race, if you have the longer course, as it was, there's more classic style obstacles for them to get through, whereas this was more straightforward. Mm. But yeah, I think, you know, even with this finish, Wiebes, she's just got such a strong kick that up the Vanberg, it doesn't make any difference if it's flat or if it's this type of climb, she's still going to come out the strongest. And she had some incredible help from Christine Mayerus, who we love to see back.
Oh my gosh, there. She is just like back to the Mayerus that we know from years past, I think. Like, she's been so strong.
Yeah, I don't think she's ever been in that final lead out role in such a hard finale. And that was awesome. I think that we've seen the best of her now. Like, she was probably capable of it before, but, you know, there was other riders kind of in that last position. And she was awesome.
And so far into her career, she was able to
still do it.
It's really cool. Yeah.
But I guess that's also the benefit of, like you were saying, not having necessarily the A team show up for this race anymore, is that these riders can show their face a bit more. And like, because it's televised now, like we can see, damn, like she was in good form. And really she pulled Wiebes out of all the sprinters, was the one who was the furthest back at a key moment. And she was the rider that actually got her to where she needed to be. Who knows if she'd been isolated and had to work a little bit harder, maybe if roles had been reversed and Pfeiffer Georgie wasn't the one doing all the work for DSM, maybe we would have seen a bit of a better battle. Louis agrees.
Yeah, DSM was really Louis, an expert in women's cycling already. It was interesting to see what DSM Firmenich Postenel was doing, because they had probably next to SC Works the most numbers in that final group. I mean, you had teams that had numbers, like UAE Team ADQ had numbers. And we'll talk about their tactics in a second, I think. And Uno X had three, so they had a couple in there. Jayco, Liv Alula Jayco had a couple in there as well. And like Little Trek only had the two, so they were kind of on the back foot in that final group once it came down to the last 14, 15K. And DSM DSM for Image Post NL, they had like pretty much their whole team up there. And I feel like watching them ride for cool, she's probably the closest thing we have to a pure sprinter, because Weebus, I don't think you could call her a pure sprinter at this point in her career. She's so, like, we saw her do this on Sunday, and versus when you look at that, what she did there and what she's done like in that stage of the Giro last year, for example, and how she's performed at like the CMAC Ladies Tour, stuff like that. And then you look at what Kuhl is accomplished. Kuhl is so fast, but on this finish and how Pfeiffer Georgie was riding, like Pfeiffer looked so good when the splits were made on the Vanberg a couple laps in a row. She was just perfectly positioned and just looked so strong. And then going into the finale with Kuhl, their protected rider, Pfeiffer had that final effort that she did and then peeled off the front when Myers took over, and she was looking behind her, and Kuhl was like, she was already cooked. She couldn't do anything more than just hold the wheel. And I feel like kudos to the team for backing Kuhl and having that belief. But also there's a point where mid race, Kuhl was able to make it over the climb with like that selection that happened on the penultimate time up the climb. But then that might've been the effort that, you know, cooked her legs for the finale in the final sprint. And so it was an interesting dynamic. I wonder how the team will look at that and look at what Pfeiffer did and how they can utilize her better in the future, because I think she looked awesome, not only because she's on my fantasy team.
Well, I want to ask a question for the DS captain wearing hat to Gracie in that situation. If you're a rider and you know in yourself that you are going to have that kick that's going to be in the mix for the win, and as a DS watching the race on the screen, do you change tactics and say, hey, we have this other rider who is looking strong. Maybe she's burnt already a bit too much energy because, you know, she's been more in that working role, but do you switch tactics or do you just still stick to the original plan? Or perhaps at least let Pfeiffer, because DSM had the numbers, let her have more of a floating role and, you know, maybe be positioned in front of Charlotte Kuhl, but allow her to have the opportunity so she's there. At least she can still have a crack.
Yeah, good question. I think that in general, have a plan and stick to it, because then you can dissect it afterwards. I think in this situation, I still think that they did the right thing and it just didn't work out in hindsight. I don't know what Kuhl was feeling or thinking during the race. I can say it's very likely that she was still backing herself, because she is a sprinter and the sprinters are a whole different species in the race, and they will suffer. They will go, it's me today. I've got all the pressure. I don't feel good, but I know I can pull it out of the bag at the end if I can just get through this next phase of the race, next phase. And so that is like what makes the difference between a good sprinter and a great sprinter, is the great sprinters never give up. Even if they feel awful, they'll get to the finish and they can win still. And I think, not knowing her, I would assume that she has a bit of that mongrel in her, and that she would have just been like, I'm going to try. And so if it was any other type of rider, you could then go, well, she should have said in the race that she wasn't feeling good. And it was her responsibility to say, Georgie, it's for you today. Let's swap. But because she's a pure sprinter, I would say that scenario is less likely. And it's still the best thing to do, to just go all in for someone that you know is a winner. And the only other option was to make the decision before that day, to the day before in the team meeting, if they're like, Charlotte Kuhl's got some great opportunities coming up. We know she's not quite on form this week. Let's talk about the other option, which is Georgie, how are you going? Are you ready to have your crack today? Because you might not get more opportunities for the rest of the season. And that's the moment I think that you can have that better discussion. I just don't think with a sprinter type, you can necessarily do it in the race. Not to say you can't, but I think that that is harder than maybe another scenario with different types of riders, if that makes sense.
Good point. I guess it's just because this wasn't a classic sprinter finish. I agree 100% what you're saying, because I've seen sprinters do that, and I know even in myself that I've suffered through races, but knowing if I could just get to the line with the front group, then I can do it, and to really back yourself. But because the finish was so hard, yeah, that's why I was just thinking, based on how hard the finish was, and it wasn't a typical sprinter's finish, because we do see that if you can just get over one more hill, one more hill, one more hill, and then you have that flat finish that you're used to, or maybe a slight drag, but this was a different beast.
And maybe there was a bit of ego to it too, like say Weebus wasn't at this race, would that make a difference to Cool and her attitude toward the race? But because Weebus is there, she's the one to beat. You're like, I want to be one of the best in the world. I need to try and beat the best in the world. I'm good. Like, I'm going to try, even though it's not a dead flat sprint. So, yeah, it's interesting to see what comes into that those decisions.
This is just the insane thing about Weebers, though, right? Like, if we think back years ago, say when, like, Chloe Hoskins was on form and there was a point where she was one of the best sprinters of the world, or Yolinda Hora. Like, for this sort of finish, I wouldn't have necessarily, I would have backed Yolin maybe a bit higher than, say, Chloe, but you would have gone with a different rider. But for the best sprinter in the world to then say you can also finish this race off, it's just like, yeah, I don't know. That's why I went with Balsamo for my pick once Weebers was picked, because I'm like, she's the one who's going to get the closest to Weebers. So unless something happens to Weebers, like, she's the best bet next. And then, of course, Puck had a fantastic ride.
Once we go into the next chunk of after Binda, and once we're back in Belgium for that next block of races, if we look at how the riders behind Weebus did and Cool, then I'm like, Cool didn't have terrible form.
No.
She was still up there in the splits. Like, she was still there. It was just that final kick at the end, which after a 160-kilometer race, when you've done the Vanberg however many times, as someone of her style of rider, that would have been even harder to accomplish. So I think she's still in for a run against Weebus once we get to, like, Gent-Wevelgem and Bruges de Panne, once we get to those flatter races. And I think, looking at how the race went on Sunday and ahead to those races, like, Balsamo stands out for me as one of the most exciting riders to line up against Weebus in the coming races.
Yes.
But when you throw Cool in there too, I'm like, okay, so we have a conversation about these sprints. Like, it's not going to be, I mean, remember a couple years ago, what was it, 2022? When Balsamo did the triple, like, won three races in a row, and one of them was against Weebus, and yeah, she had a broken spoke, but Balsamo still won. And so I think we're going to go ahead into these races with Drenthe in mind and think about the fact that Balsamo 100% can take her in these races if she has the right riders around her, like Weebus does with SD Works Pro Time. And I think for Cool, the same is true. The team, even though she wasn't maybe the right rider to pick for this finish on Sunday, the team is still willing to give 100% for her if she's on the start line. And so that's what we need. That's what we need from these teams to take on Weebus when it comes to these races coming up.
And we're going to see that. Like, what when we have Trek with their full lineup, and you've got SD Works Pro Time with their full lineup and DSM with their full lineup, we're going to see these three different trains going. And I think we discussed last week or the week before how we theorized how you would beat Weebers. And it's basically just having that firepower in front of, you know, the sprinter, that last rider who can do a Capecchi, and then putting them on even, like, an even playing field in those last 150 meters.
I want to talk about the move that went on the penultimate lap of the Vanberg, because a couple of years ago, that would have been it. That would have been the race. That would have been the race done. You had the three riders to watch up the road, with originally Weebus and Cool were up there, and Kuhl had Five for Georgie up there, plus Puck was up there as well. And then a couple more riders tacked on the back with Myers and Elise Balsamo. So you had the three best sprinters in the peloton in that group. The only sprinter in the peloton, really, who can line up against these riders, Chiara Consoni of UAE Team ADQ. She'd missed that move, but the three of them were up there and they were all rolling through. Nobody was like acting. Once they started moving, they were all rolling through. There was some pretty funny moments with Puck trying to wave everybody through to work, but they were there. They were rolling, and behind you had UAE Team ADQ chasing them down. And I was kind of laughing to myself because, like, yeah, like 3 years ago, that just would have been it. The race would have been done. Like, there's no way that group would have been brought back. And it didn't change the outcome, like, one bit. Three riders on the podium were the three riders in that move.
Yeah, UAE were one of the bigger losers of the race with results. So I think that they probably just were on the back foot quite a lot during the race, and it just cost them at the end. So worth a try, but I think in the classics, you don't want to be on the back foot too many times because it takes so much energy to reshuffle the deck of cards. And yeah, it's not the kind of energy that you should be spending in the race, in such hard races like these.
The finale, how important it was to have like a couple of those riders, like, you know, Trek had just Loretta Hansen, but she did an incredible effort to put Balsamo exactly where she needed to be. It was a sprint before the sprint. And if you didn't have, yeah, it was brilliant. If you didn't have that key rider, if you didn't have a Five for Georgie at that point, or a Loretta Hansen or Christine Mayoris, you were just, you know, Puck managed to put herself where she needed to be, but you're out of it that by that point. And those roads are so narrow that, you know, there's little opportunity to move around. So that was really key. And I guess they burnt all their energy before that. So that's, yeah, unfortunate for them.
And I think Chiara also came to the race not, I don't know. You know how you know how the race is going to go? Like the morning of the race? Like sometimes you wake up and it's like you're on another plane. Like things just, you just feel lighter. You feel like things are going to go well, and they go well. And then sometimes it's like everything goes wrong. You burn your oatmeal, you stub your toe, you drop your helmet, like all these things. And I feel like for Chiara Consoni, maybe I'm wrong, but she was wearing like pieces of paper with her number written on it, like a Sharpie written. So I feel like, yeah, it's it was maybe just one of those days for her and team UAE ADQ.
Maybe. There's a few honorable mentions, though. Victoire Berthaud, we haven't seen Kofidis up in these kind of races before much. So good to see top five. Same with Liv Alula-Jaco. They've kind of fallen off the classics results sheets for a couple of years at least now. So to see Letizia Paternoster, she looked really good in that last few K. Like she was picking the right wheels and didn't have any help. So I think that's going to bolster some confidence. And then they had a couple of other riders finishing not too far back. So that'll be good heading into the next wave of races. Who else? Yeah. And also the Human Powered Health team, they were really active in that last few K too. They had a really good lead out going, so didn't quite have the legs to pull it off, but certainly put themselves in the right place at the right time at the end of the race.
Yeah, I wrote down Lily Williams of Human Powered Health as kind of just one of the really impressive riders of the day. Like she ended up 34th overall at the end, and I think that they were maybe riding for Mayal Grosseteste, but because she's the one who finished the highest of the team. But Lily had just a god-awful day. Like she was on the side of the road more than anyone else in the whole peloton, and she still managed to make it into that final group, which is more than a lot of riders can say. There was a ton of DNFs and some riders that finished quite far back, and she was still up there in the end in that final peloton that made it to the finish. So I was pretty impressed with her, to be honest. I also wrote down Victoria Guanzini as a rider that she won Las Min, and that was from a move, like a late race move, but she still finished sixth on Sunday, which is really impressive. Winning from a breakaway and riding into a result in a race that ends in a sprint, two very different things.
Yeah.
So it's cool to see her up there in this race after that Lusseman win. And especially for her, like, she's had a couple setbacks in her career and was coming into form for the tour last year. And so I'm really excited to see her already so early in the season riding so well, especially when FDJ Suez is like really two women down at this point with Cecilia Trip-Ludwig with a broken sacrum and Marta Kvalli as well out for the count at the moment. So that they have Victoria up there and finishing well in a race like Drenta after winning Les Mis is great news for FDJ Suez. But I also think like Uno X Mobility were riding super well. They had riders up there, and they're a team that, you know, has put a lot behind the women, and they really give the women a lot of support. And so it's cool to see that coming through in the results of the riders with Maria Julia Confalon. This is the one of the hardest names for me to say. Maria Julia Confalonieri. Wow. Finishing in the top 10, but also they had more than just her in that final peloton as well. And I think a year ago, we maybe would have only seen one rider in there from Uno X. So I was happy to see a bunch up there. I feel like Alice Towers really deserves a shout out for making it into that 8-rider split on the penultimate lap of the Vanberg. She was really the only Canyon SRAM rider in the mix. And yeah, so it was great to see her up there. And then, of course, Puck Pieterse, like, just really, really cool rider. And she's on the expected start list for Trofeo Alfredo Binda. And I think the way that that race goes and how she was riding this weekend, she's like, it's just like a matter of time.
I'm just so regretting not picking her on the draft. This draft is haunting me. Absolutely haunting me. Like, oh. I try not to care, but I care so deeply.
No, I know.
I care so much.
Lauren, I am last in the draft and second in the men's draft. I'm like, what did I do wrong in life? What is happening? Like, I don't know anything about men's cycling.
It's because you care too much. You care too much about women's cycling. And there were lots of heart picks, as we said. But anyway, this is just going to be like this little, what is it, like that little stone in your shoe the whole time, this whole year. It's gonna be like a little stone in my shoe I'm walking around.
I should have anticipated how invested I was going to get in the draft, and when I was tallying up the new tally last night, I was just like, just defeated. I felt like deflated. And on top of that, I got a terrible run at the Bike Grid, the new game that Escape Collective made. That's kind of like, you know, like a daily word puzzle or something like that. It's like that, but for bikes, and it's really fun, and you get to pick riders, and we have an advantage because the women, you can pick any rider from, like, say it's like you have a grid, right, with three different columns and on either side. And it'll be like, okay, an American rider who's won a 1-day world tour race. And there are a handful of men who have done that, but there's also a handful of women. And the majority of the people who play the game go for the men. And so you, as a fan of women's cycling, you have an advantage already by knowing in your head any woman that would fit into that. Because it all comes down to like percentages of who has picked that rider or the likelihood of someone picking them. It's cool. Like over the day, as more people play, your score will go down or up. But yesterday, completely butchered it, like embarrassingly bad. And Tom's and I have a running competition in that now. Thank you, Dane Cash, for adding another thing for Tom's and I to be competitive about. And he just demolished me yesterday. And so I got completely destroyed in the Bike Grid. And then I tallied up the results for the draft, and I was like, I hate this.
Abby, it's good to focus. What else are you not losing in life, but winning at life. That's what I'm trying to do with myself. I'm like, I'm definitely losing this battle. It's as good as my actual cycling career was. Some good things there.
We just have to hold out. That's so true. We just have to hold out for the swap.
It's a long season.
At least Gracie has passed Matt now. So Matt isn't leading the draft, and we can all be a little... I love Matt, but he can't beat us. Sorry, Matt. He listens to this podcast. But there's one thing has been set right, and that is that Gracie's leading the draft. We'll see. We'll see what happens. Not a lot of riders line. Like, Matt didn't have a single rider in Ronda Van Drenthe, and Trofeo Alfredo Bindo will also be interesting. But yeah, the draft is a constant source of stress for me at the moment. Although, speaking of the draft and the pick and the swap coming up in June, there's one rider who wasn't picked that I think we thought, well, she's coming back from having a baby. We don't know. Ellen Van Dyke is back, and she's back winning. Like, so she lined up for Extremadura, Volta Extremadura in Spain, a 2.2 in Spain, and Little Trek, and also Movistar had kind of really impressive teams on the start line for such a small race. But Ellen Van Dyke, in the very first stage, she was doing the lead out for I don't know who. And it was kind of an uphill, a little bit of an uphill finish. And she just dropped everybody. Like, she did a perfect lead out for Olivia Burrell, the Canadian on Movistar who ended up winning the stage. But she just, like, just went. And everyone was behind her. Like, the peloton just fell apart. And Brody ended up finishing, I think, second on the stage, which is awesome for her. But yeah, seeing Ellen back in the peloton and like not missing a single stride up there, and then she went on to win the third stage time trial with Brody finishing second as well.
It's 5 months postpartum.
It's insane.
5 months, or like five and a half now, but still, I can't fathom it. I know I'm not an athlete, but it's mind-boggling for me. But I guess Ellen was in a really fortunate position when she was pregnant. She managed to maintain a really, really good load. So after a few weeks of rest, after having her little boy, she was, back into training and just on training camp in November already with the team, riding with the team. So she is an incredible athlete, but to see her back winning already is just phenomenal. And she's always said that Paris was her goal. And you know, if Van Dyke has a goal in her mind, it's going to take an injury for her not to kind of reach it, in my mind. So she will get to Paris.
I'm so impressed. I was just so impressed. Mm. Like, obviously we've said it before, the women who do this, like Lizzie as well, and Eleanor Barker, all the women who have babies and come back this quickly, they have an entire team around them throughout the entire pregnancy and in the recovery process to be able to get back to that level. But just to see her up there, I mean, it was like no time had passed. And she's such an awesome person in general. I feel like I love it when good people like do cool shit. And this is so cool to see. And yeah, I'm so happy for her. I'm happy for Little Trek because that just adds more firepower to the lead out for Eliza Balsamo. Like we were just talking about, she needs Ellen Van Dyke to be up there. And if Ellen can do this, granted it's a 2.2 stage race, so it's very different from a world tour one day, but I think that this will put into Ellen's, like, not that she needs a confidence boost. She's fucking Ellen Van Dyke. But if she if she needed that knowledge that she could slot herself back into the peloton just seamlessly, she has it now. I can't wait to see what Little Trek is going to do with her in the upcoming races. If they're going to take her to like Trofeo Alfredo Bindo, which we'll talk about in a minute, but is a little bit of a quieter world tour one day race, it's not, you know, Gent Wevelgem. It's not as crazy as Bruges de Panne and the crosswinds there. So we'll see if they decide to take her there. But I feel like, yeah, if she can continue this comeback and be there for like Paris-Roubaix.
Well, I think I saw she's tentatively like she's on the list, right?
Think about this for a second. Did you ever jump on a trampoline after you gave birth?
Yeah, well, the physio, you know, they have you do like these little side hop things to test your pelvic floor. But
Imagine riding over cobbles like that
okay,
physically.
she'll be what, six and a bit months postpartum. If she's done her core work and her pelvic floor exercises, which I'm sure she's on top of, I reckon she'll be all right.
She'll manage.
Well, they say you shouldn't you shouldn't run until you're 4 months postpartum.
I wouldn't put it past her, but I actually think it's unlikely that we'll see Van Dyke in the Cobble Classics. I think that she actually doesn't love the craziness of the bunch anyway. And I think coming back from having a baby, she'll be a bit more cautious. And then also to stay safe and healthy and not have crashes before her big goal of going to the Olympics, I think that they'll be playing it a lot safer than in the past with her. So I think she'll just be doing races without cobbles.
And you know,
She does hate Paris-Roubaix. She's been vocal
yeah,
about that.
she had a bad crash there, I think, as well. Was it the first year or the second?
I think it was the
Yeah,
first.
so
I think it was
no,
the first.
that's a good point, Gracie. And that's just made me come back to the draft and one of my draft picks, another time trial specialist who's probably going to be thinking the same thing. So now I've got even more worry in my head. So thanks. A great classics writer who will probably not do the hardcore classics.
Hey, my top pick didn't race at Ronda van Drenthe and isn't going to race Trofeo Alfredo Binda.
Oh.
Visma Lisabike opted not to race Drenthe, and they're also not racing Binda, which is, you know, it's like
Oh.
not unheard of for a World Tour team to skip one of these races. Drenthe and Binda are really far apart, and if you go like Strada, Drenthe, Binda, like it's a heck of a lot of travel for the teams.
Yeah.
One another reason why the calendar needs
To
to be
shift.
reordered, but yeah, but like Visma Lisabike just opted not to do either.
Well, I saw they're
So,
down to race the Tour of Normandy, which starts, it's on now, right?
well, it's not enough points
Yeah, I know.
for
I
me
know.
to get out a
But that's what
lap.
they've opted for instead, to stay in sort of northern France.
Before we preview Binda really quick, Dan Owens brought up an awesome point on Slack that I just wanted to pose to the group, see if anyone had any thoughts. And it kind of ties into a couple of the things we've talked about in this episode and also in last episode. He said, watching Drenthe and Extremadura and then seeing EF's results and Elise Longaborghini winning in other races, we're in for an awesome spring racing season. Even though SUX Pro Time will have the favorites, I don't think the rest of the peloton will make it easy for them. Really impressed with Puck Pieterse attacking in Drenthe and Movistar at Extremadura, which is a valid point, and I think something that we've all kind of mentioned or at least come close to that. Yeah, SUWorks is lining up for every single one of these races as the favorites, but man, the peloton is rising to meet them, and I think that Drenthe was kind of. Even though Wiebes won in such dominant fashion, we still had a lot of interesting points to take away from the race about other teams and how they can challenge them in the future.
Yeah, I think this is the best we've seen the women's peloton with depth and strength. So, yeah, they're not going to take the wins easy, that's for sure.
This is a theory for me. Will Paris-Roubaix be the race that like eludes them?
That's a good theory. I like that one.
Yeah.
Maybe they never win Paris-Roubaix.
Imagine.
That would be poetic justice, though, wouldn't
It'd be
it?
awful. It's very sad for Capecchi, though. I mean, like, that's
Yeah.
definitely one of her heart, but like
Well,
heart
she can win
wins
in
when
2029.
she's on a different team.
And still probably wearing the world champs jersey.
All right, so we got Trofeo Alfredo Binda coming up, and I wanted to talk about this one a little bit with you guys because in the past, I've been an advocate for this race, even though I had myself a terrible experience there. Although I met a very awesome cat, the race itself was rough. But I have always loved this race. I mean, it's one of the longer running races on the women's calendar. It's been around since I think 1974 or something like that. And to put it in perspective, Drenthe is also one of the like quote longer running races, and it's only been around since I think 2007. So it's a race that's like a fixture in the women's calendar. And is, in my eyes, one of the more exciting courses of the spring. I really like the course and the fact that, you know, there are hills in it, but it can come down to a reduced bunch sprint. It's been won by Mariana Voss. It's been won by Balsamo, but it's also been won solo in the rain, like by Kasia in 2018. That was like one of my favorite races of all time. But in the year 2024, looking at Trofeo Alfredo Binda, the start list we're going to see there, which kind of like Drenta is going to be a lacking a lot of the major names in the sport. There's like a massive group of them at altitude who opted out of Drenta and Binda in prep for the bigger races to come. I think it's important to have World Tour 1 days on the calendar that aren't Flanders, like races that can go to other riders and can help other riders kind of elevate their own abilities, and like Sharon Van Anroy last year, for example. But I also feel like when I was looking into this race and I was trying to find the courses and stuff for it, it's when you have this race stacked up against like the races of Flanders Classics and even the ASO races that are kind of really stepping it up this year in the wake of the Tour de France Femme, I feel like I kind of side with Gracie that I don't know about this race anymore.
Hmm. Yeah, as in like it probably should switch from World Tour status. That's what you're getting in, right? Like still be like a very high 1.1 would be, I suppose, a good opportunity to score some big points and, you know, get some of those riders like we've seen in the past, like Sharin getting their name really out there. I mean, not that she wasn't out there, but an opportunity for riders like that who are like not necessarily on the first tier of the team, but on the cusp of breaking through to being a leader in the future. I think it's always been a great race for that. I mean, years and years previously, you used to get the creme de la creme that would show up for it. But now, like you said, it's just, yeah, it's that awkward part in the program. And with the traveling, the calendar, it just doesn't work for a lot of people, particularly if you're targeting the big major classics, which start with Gent-Wevelgem, actually.
Yeah, I mean, if it was right after Strada and people didn't have to fly all the way back to...
Yeah, I think it would work, like a midweek race. I think if it was a midweek race after Strada, because there was a race the day after on the Sunday, and then, you know, you have a couple of days to do recovery and then race again maybe on the Wednesday, that could work. And then those riders who've done that block would go off and do another training block. And then you'd have the other riders perhaps then doing that race in Drenta. And then you'd have the series of other classic races in the northern part of Europe. In terms of the calendar and when we think of the UCI's commitment to sustainability and climate goals, things do have to shift a little bit. And they will, I'm sure, with time. But for... And money-wise, just like you were saying, the transportation of sending different crews and buses to different parts of Europe is just not sustainable. So I think, yeah, it's if it could become a midweek race, maybe that's the only way I see it working for it to stay to World Tour status and still take those riders from Strada, riders that suit that course, a Trofeo Binda. That's how I would do it.
If we're ever going to have a Milan San Remo for women or some variation of it, which is a Saturday race and Binda is a Sunday race.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, have it. You could keep it as a Sunday race as a 1.1 or have it midweek of this week going into Milan San Remo.
I mean, it's not far from Milan.
No.
Where, like, I remember doing it the... Men's Movistar team was staying in the same hotel as us. And I think also one other team, one of the men's teams. So like, it's not that far in terms of travel if you had it before, like on the Wednesday before. But yeah, I think that as the rest of the women's World Tour 1 day races kind of grow in prestige, especially the Flanders Classics races like Omloop and, you know, Gent-Wevelgem, Flanders, those races, and then you even have the ASO changing their Ardennes races Flèche and Liège-Bastogne-Liège to finish after the men's race, like Flanders Classics does, which is a completely different conversation, but it does. I think that they're seeing what Flanders Classics is doing and they're thinking, okay, maybe we can get more people watching the women's race if we do this, or they're thinking something, but things are changing. And I think that the majority of the women's one day races are rising, and Trofeo Alfredo Binda is kind of being pulled along on the coattails of these other races because it is a women's world tour race and has been for years. But if we were to have the women's world tour come into play this year, would it be picked as a women's world tour race? Because I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't know. I think they do some things right. Like, I think that they adhere quite well to criteria set for, you know, being a world tour race. And they've not done anything dodgy that comes to mind, like some other races have. But yeah, I don't know. It just seems like it's a, yeah, much less prestigious, as you've mentioned. And I'm just trying to think of what they could do to bolster its appeal. Like, could we change the course a little bit, lengthen it, make we could potentially make Binda the women's take on Milan-San Remo, not even go down that coastline, not go try and recreate that men's race, but make a longer version of Binda, maybe. I don't know, just throwing ideas out there. I don't know if that's the right call or not, but like make it its own monument in women's cycling, because it's got the legacy piece. It's pretty well organized. It's quite well covered. How can we make it just that little bit better and more interesting? I don't want to use that word either. That's not the right word, but more
I mean, it prestigious just needs the big riders to want to show up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I like, I love this race. Like, I want to be clear. Like, I love this race. Mm. I feel like it often gives us really, really quality racing. And I always come out of this race thinking that there are a lot of storylines that you can follow. Mm. But yeah, I do think if you're looking at it compared to the other races around it, it's not surprising to see a lot of the riders sitting it out. And we still have a lot of great riders lining up for it. Like, Reusser's on the start list as of now. Great news for Lauren. Balsamo is on the start list as well, alongside Shirin Van Anroy, and Mavi Garcia is lining up for Livelou Lajeco. And so there's still some top quality racers lining up, but it's just, yeah, it's an interesting one. I thought it'd be worth a discussion.
I do like your first point, Abby, in that it's a great opportunity now for some other riders to get a world tour win early in the season that's outside of those bigger races. So I think that is a bonus point for the race to stay world tour.
So still tune into it, because it is a great race. I mean, I don't think there's been many years I haven't enjoyed watching those finishing laps.
And it's much less of a climber's course than it used to be now too, which just shows us how much the level and physiology, I guess, has changed over the
across
last
the
10
board.
Years.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Because when we started out racing, it was very much like the climbers got sent there. And if you weren't really climbing, it was an awful race to have to do. It was like I would have been thrown in as a very, very, very last resort, as in like everyone else was sick on the team or something.
Man, when I got sent there, it was like, Abby, you're going to be our girl for this. And I was like, nope. It's
not. Yeah, well, I mean, like, you know, Corinne won it in 2017. Balsamo has won it. Like Gracie's saying, it's very much, you know, those riders who have serious punch but can also sprint. It's definitely not the climbers race anymore. It used to be where, like, Emma Pooley would win.
More exciting racing to come, and we're excited for the rest of the season. I think it's going to be a great one.
Excited, nervous.
Before we wrap up. Yeah.
That'll be the question.
Can we just do away with the draft?
That'll be a question at the end of the year. Did the draft make it more or less fun?
That'd be a great question. How are the stress levels in 2024? Aside from life stress.
I've learned a few things going into the 2025 draft that I will carry over. I need to work with my brain and not my heart, that's for sure.
Just be you, Abby.
I'll never do that. I am me. Yeah, it's not possible. Speaking of heart, I am obsessed with, I don't usually follow like award season other than kind of keeping just like a quick glance to see if artists or movies or whatever I like have won anything, just out of curiosity. But I'm not like, I don't care for the Oscars or any of these awards really, but I am obsessed with Ryan Gosling's Ken performance.
It was amazing.
Oscars.
It was amazing.
Oh my God, it's so good.
I was watching it yesterday. Yeah. Because, you know, I'm like mildly obsessed with Margot Robbie. So it was like anything to do with Barbie, I'm there.
Yeah. I mean, it was so good. Like, yeah.
I have a two-part obsession. And Abby, actually both you're going to like. First part, because of you, I've actually become more invested in Taylor Swift. And yes. So like all my, you know, if you go on your Discovery thing, I saw it's a great, great jumper. If I go on my Discovery on Instagram, it's heavily like Taylor Swift. There's lots of recommendations, even my news article things, like the Discover on that comes up with Taylor Swift. I watched the documentary for a second time on her, Miss Americana, and I liked her even more after watching that. And then I've been listening to a lot of her music too. So I've had like a bit of a Taylor Swift obsession week, which my partner has definitely picked up on. My baby loves the music, so it's definitely really good background music. Not to say it puts him to sleep, but it's very he's very into it. And then my second obsession is that I get to see you in a couple of weeks. Because guess what?
Oh, my God.
I book flights to Girona on April 1st.
Oh, this is so exciting.
So I did That's it. Awesome. I'm coming to visit. And Taylor Wiles will be there at the same time. She doesn't know. I haven't told her. I thought maybe to surprise her and Olivia. Might be fun.
I don't know if she listens to this podcast, so she might not.
Olivia used to, but I don't know. They're pretty busy now and not really in the cycling bubble of racing. So I think maybe they'll skip it and not get this far into the podcast. I don't know if they'd listen anymore. So
I'm so excited. I'll only get to see you for a couple days, but
we'll have to make the most, definitely the second as well. Yeah. So make sure you're all packed for Mexico, God, so like excited. Before. Do the packing before. Yeah.
I can't believe I'm so excited. Gracie, I'm so sorry you're going to miss it.
Yeah, a bit sad, but I'm really happy for you guys. I think it's going to be so special and nice and well deserved to be together in a cool place.
I'm like hoping that 2025 could be like the moment where the four of us could potentially meet, particularly if Gracie is like coming back for the Tour de France again, because I will be a year old, so you never know. Maybe Kimbis comes as babysitter.
Yeah,
it's a totally different game.
Wrangle that.
Yeah, it's a different game when they're 1 year old and they don't like require constant feeding and everything like that. So yeah,
it's a lot easier when the nap schedule is like
less hectic. As well.
Oh man, I'm stoked.
That's good news, Lauren. Well done.
Yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to it. It's been a long time since I did something like this, and I was like, just do it. I've never traveled with a really small baby, only with Harry, which was way more hectic, traveling to Australia with a 1 and almost half-year-old alone. That was a little bit of hell.
Yeah,
I can't imagine, because I put Lila to bed last night and she has a floor bed, and I put her to bed and she was like curled up, super cute. And I usually just put her down, turn the light off and walk out, and she's asleep in like 3 minutes. That's normally how it goes. But she's hit this patch of energy lately, and I turned on the monitor like a minute after I'd walked out, and she turned on the light and was literally running circles, just running circles.
No,
like in the middle of her room. What are you doing?
She tricked you. She made you think you're falling asleep. She doesn't realize that that's a camera.
Oh my God. I was looking at the monitor like, what demon has infested my child? Because like 2 weeks ago, she just fell asleep. And now she's just like, yesterday she decided we were going to redo all the furniture. She's moving all the furniture around. She's trying to feng shui the place.
Kids.
Gracie, obsession.
I watched one of the movies that was very much nominated for all of the award season awards, especially the Oscars. I took my mum to the movies last week and we watched Poor Things. Probably not a great movie to watch with a parent, but it was, we loved it. It's so weird. And yeah, I've been thinking about it a lot since then. It's one of those movies that kind of just stays with you for a while. So
I
yeah,
don't know
if
anything about it. I just love Emma Stone, but
yeah, she was really good and she won Best Actress at the Oscars for it. So a bit controversial of a win because there were, a lot of people were hoping that First Nations actress, what was her name
From
again? Lily
yeah.
Gladstone was going to take it out for the first time as a First Nation person, but Emma still did a very good job. So, and I actually haven't seen that Killers of the Flower Moon, so I can't comment on the comparison of the actresses. And I'm not an expert anyway, but I loved Poor Things. It was weird, but had some really good gems in it about, it was actually quite feminist in a weird way. So yeah, I'm not going to talk about what it's about, but if you're into a bit kooky, well done cinema, it's worth a watch.
It's on my list for sure. I feel like I've been resisting it a bit because of some of the, I know some of the things that happen. So I've been kind of like,
I really know nothing about it, so maybe that's good going into it.
really highly rated in terms of, I don't know, the industry and the reception of it has been. Everyone, like all the podcasts, pop culture pop podcasts I listen to and stuff, talk about it really highly. So if Gracie liked it, then yeah, okay, I'll do it. I'll watch it.
The last movie I went to was with Gracie, and that was Barbie. That
That
was
was the best.
August last year. That was the best few days. So actually, I got my like Gracie time last year, which was so good. And now I get my Abby and Taylor time, so I'm pretty happy. All within
I
one.
also got Gracie time in July, August,
Oh,
maybe
the
beginning
tour.
August.
Oh
We got
my
to hang out at the
gosh.
tour.
Yeah,
The
we
tour
ate
as
real
well.
French food.
We're all sleep deprived and slightly running on fumes. Okay, thanks you guys for the podcast. We'll be back next week. Hopefully, I don't know. Hopefully, Fight for Georgie wins Trofeo Alfredo Binda and I can launch myself out of last place in the league, but I just don't see it happening. I need a lot of points. It's a sad, sad world
Hey,
in the Real Talk League for some of us.
I've got two good picks potentially, like Bal Simone Roosa. They're in my draft, so don't F it up, man.
I see you making a glorious comeback, Lauren.
Yeah, one person on Discord did say that they backed my draft and they thought that, like I said, maybe it would be like the half season where I start pulling the points a bit later.
Don't you also have Aliza Longaborghini?
Yeah.
She's
I
flying.
know.
Ugh, I'm not worried about you at all. I'm just gonna hold down the bottom of this league.
Look, I think the top step is going to be really hard to reach, but I could aim for a podium. I think that's definitely realistic. That's what I'm telling myself.
I
You
agree.
know what?
You've got this.
You got this.
Sorry, Tom's walked in. He's wearing the core bodysuit.
Oh yeah, it's like he's gonna go work at the Willy Wonka's chocolate factory.
Or he's clearing out asbestos or something.
Yeah, is that what they wear at the local Haribo factory?
Yeah, is that his side hustle?